By the time she finally pulled the net through the tank, the fish were too big, the water was too tired, and the meat didn't taste right. She'd pushed past the date she circled on the calendar. Harvest, written in black marker at the 5-month mark, because the fish looked like they could put on just a little more weight. 1 more week. Maybe 2. The customers she'd lined up bought a few and never came back. The rest of that batch went into her own freezer, her dog's bowl, and eventually the compost. 5 months of work, and the bucket that should have felt like money just felt heavy. 5 months later, a full bucket sounds like an ending. But it's really about what happens in the weeks right before that, when the water and the fish start whispering that it's time to harvest, and you decide whether to listen. Last time, we talked about what the numbers mean, ammonia, nitrite, nitrate, pH, oxygen, and how the chemistry in your tank starts moving quietly in the wrong direction before you see a single fish in distress. By now in this story, your tank is cycled. Your filtration is running 24 hours a day. Your tilapia are stocked and eating well. You've been testing weekly, watching the color shifts in your vials, learning what normal looks like for your particular tank. The next question is what to do with all that work when your fish are finally the size you've been aiming for. The grow-out phase, that block of months between stocking day and harvest day, is where all the invisible choices you've been making show themselves. Feed rate, stocking density, water changes, oxygen, temperature swings, all of it adds up to growth or stalls it. The good news is that tilapia will do a lot of the work for you if you've built a stable system. They are efficient little conversion engines. Feed in, growth out, as long as the environment supports them. A well-managed backyard system can take a batch of fingerlings from 1 to 1.5 inches in late spring to roughly a pound by early fall, sometimes a little less if you're selling smaller whole fish, sometimes a little more if your buyers want bigger portions. But that last stretch, from almost there to ready, is where people get nervous and make expensive decisions. They worry they're harvesting too early and leaving growth on the table. Or they swing in the other direction. Wait too long, and turn what should have been a clean, mild fillet into something that tastes muddy, overfat, or stressed. The water, as always, is talking. So are the fish. By month 3, in most warm backyard systems, you should see a noticeable change in body shape. Those skinny little fingerlings thicken through the shoulders, the head-to-body ratio shifts, and you start to see the outline of a fillet along the side instead of just a line of bone wrapped in skin. This is where a simple habit pays off. Once a month, net a sample of 5 fish. Quickly weigh and measure them, and write those numbers down. Length from snout to tail. Weight on a cheap digital kitchen scale. You're not just weighing fish, you're mapping a curve. If you do this at the end of month 2, month 3, month 4, and month 5, you'll see exactly when growth begins to slow. That slowdown is one of the first signals that it's time to think about harvesting. Picture it. Early morning. You stand by the tank with a small net in one hand and a 5-gallon bucket in the other, the plastic still smelling faintly of the hardware store aisle where you bought it. The air is cool, just barely, and there's a thin skin of mist lifting off the surface of the water. You dip the net in, slow and steady, feel the resistance as a few fish bump against the mesh, then lift. The first time you see one of your own tilapia in a bucket, not as a concept, not as a goal, but as a solid, flopping, very real thing, it changes how you think about all those feedings and pH tests. At 5 months, in a warm system with proper feeding, a good portion of your fish should be in the 1/2 pound to 3/4 pound range at minimum, with many pushing close to a pound. You don't need a lab-grade scale. If your fish are averaging around 16 ounces, give or take a couple, you are at or near market size for most direct-to-consumer buyers. Some folks like smaller fish that fit whole in a pan. Some want heavier fish to fillet. But from a biological standpoint, you are in the zone where feed conversion starts to flatten. More of what you're feeding goes to maintaining body and less to adding weight. That means every extra week you hold them at that size, your cost per pound quietly rises while the growth curve levels off. There's another signal that shows up around this stage, and it doesn't come from a scale. It comes from the water at feeding time. You've seen what healthy feeding behavior looks like by now. The sudden soft roar at the surface when the fish rush to the center, the quick violent snaps of water as they compete for pellets, the way the surface boils for a minute and then calms as everything is eaten. Watch what happens as your tank approaches its carrying capacity for the size those fish have reached. At first, it's just a little more frantic. The boil at the surface spreads wider, fish bump harder against each other, some even flash sideways as they squeeze in. Then, slowly, you'll notice one fish that doesn't push as hard. He hangs back a little. He still eats, but he eats from the edge of the group instead of the center. He's just a hair smaller than the others. His color might look a touch dull when you catch him at the right angle. It's easy to write that fish off as shy, or as a runt. You plan to keep growing after you harvest his bigger siblings. But that one fish at the edge, showing up the same way at feeding after feeding, is your garden ghost for this episode. He's the first visible sign that the tank is starting to take more out of some fish than it's giving back. As stocking density and biomass increase, the lowest-ranking fish in the social order feel the pinch first. They get less food because the bigger, more aggressive fish outcompete them. They sit closer to the margins where oxygen can fluctuate more. They are the first to show stunted growth and the first to go quiet at the surface when stress starts nibbling at the edges of your system. If you ignore that fish, if you decide he's just shy and not a signal, you risk watching that quiet edge behavior spread from one fish to three, from three to ten, until the whole tank is telling you in slow motion that you passed harvest time 2 weeks ago. The practical side of harvest begins before you ever pull a full net. You need a plan for what happens to those fish once they leave the water. If you are selling live, you need aerated holding tanks or transport totes, a route to your buyers, and a window of time where the fish are not sitting in warm plastic tubs in the back of a truck. If you're processing, cleaning, and filleting, you need ice, clean knives, a table, and a clean place to work. You also need time. Harvest day takes longer than you think, especially the first season. Processing 10 fish is practice. Processing 50 is work. Processing 100 is a full day that starts early and ends with sore hands. On the evening before harvest, stop feeding. Give the fish 12 to 24 hours without food. This does two things. It reduces waste in the tank during the stress of netting and holding, and it empties their digestive tracts, which makes cleaning easier and improves the quality of the meat. The next morning, start early. Cool water holds oxygen better, and fish are calmer in the morning than under a noon sun. There is a particular feel to a net heavy with fish. It drags differently through the water. It climbs out of the surface with a weight that surprises you the first time. Not because you didn't know what a pound feels like, but because knowing and feeling are different kinds of understanding. You pour the first net full into that same 5-gallon bucket that has been sitting by the tank for months collecting hoses and test kits, and suddenly it isn't just a prop. It is full of something you grew. If you are selling whole fish, you may sort right at the tank. Larger fish into a harvest bucket, smaller ones back into the water for a few more weeks. If you are processing, you'll move harvested fish into a holding container with clean, cool, aerated water or directly onto ice depending on your setup and local regulations. Work in small batches. Move fish from tank to table to ice with as little delay as you can manage. The quality of your product is decided as much by that handling process as by anything you did in the months before. Now, let's circle back to that one fish at the edge of the feeding frenzy, the one you kept seeing but not quite paying attention to. In a healthy, appropriately stocked system, he's a note, not a chorus. You might choose to cull him early, harvest him before the rest, or keep him back after the main harvest to grow out a bit longer in a less crowded tank. But when you start to see more fish copying his behavior, hanging back, feeding less aggressively, staying lower in the water column when you'd expect them to surface, that's your signal that the tank, as a system, is done with this batch. You are past the point where extra feed will translate cleanly into extra weight. You are approaching the point where the water, no matter how good your filtration, is working harder every day to maintain balance for a biomass that has outgrown the volume. The woman who lost the flavor of her fish rather than the fish themselves did not miss her harvest window by months. She missed it by maybe 3 weeks. During that time, her feeding log would have shown FCR creeping in the wrong direction, more feed per pound of gain. Her water tests would have shown nitrates climbing steadily, despite regular changes. That one shy fish at the edge became three, then five. She noticed, in a vague way, that the tank felt tighter at feeding time, that the surface looked more chaotic, that there was less of that clean, controlled boil, and more of a desperate churn. The water was trying to tell her. The fish were trying to tell her, she held anyway. When she finally harvested, the bucket was full. Visually, the scene was everything she had pictured back in March when she first filled the tank. Solid, thick-bodied fish, heavy in the hand, the 5-gallon bucket sloshing against her leg as she carried it to the processing table, the cold shock of ice on her wrists as she packed the cleaned fish away. But the first pan-fried fillet told the other half of the story, a faint muddy note in the flesh, a texture just this side of overworked, not inedible, but not what she wanted to hand to a paying customer as her first impression. The next season, she paid closer attention to that one quiet fish at feeding time. She kept a better log of her monthly weights, noticed when the growth curve flattened, noticed when the nitrates started climbing faster, even with regular water changes. When that same edge feeder behavior began to show up in more than a handful of fish, she circled a date 2 weeks out, stopped increasing feed, and harvested on schedule. The bucket weighed a little less that year. The fish tasted better. Her customers came back and harvested on schedule. The bucket weighed a little less that year. The fish tasted better. Her customers came back. That empty bucket by your tank is going to be part of this story sooner than you think. The question is, what fills it? Fish pulled at the right time, firm and mild and easy to sell, or fish you kept a little too long chasing a few extra ounces that turned out to be mostly stress and waste? So tell me honestly, if you had to choose between harvesting a little early and leaving some growth on the table, or pushing your fish a little too long and risking flavor, stress, and waste, which way would you lean? Are you the kind of person who likes to leave a little margin, or the kind who wants to squeeze every last bit out of the season, even if it means flirting with the edge?